Two things. Number one, I was very impressed with that presentation. I hope you were listening carefully. There's a lot in there. My colleague Wendy Mariner, who I am going to speak for, she's given me permission to misquote her, has argued for a while that public health and medicine are merging. And she thinks it's a good thing, but I think listening to Professor Parmet, you could say that as they'll merge and then public health will be obliterated. I can see that happening too. This presentation is really a footnote to Wendy's liberty versus responsibility. And, you know, we're all wellness people, we're all public health people. We'd rather prevent an illness than treat it. But as my colleague Wendy Mariner would say, it's a mixed bag. You know, there's good things and bad things about wellness programs, and they're likely to be driven by cost considerations almost exclusively in the foreseeable time. Now, if you want a copy of a much more detailed thing that I'm going to give you, just give me your email address and we'll mail you a copy of this. I'm just going to summarize the highlights of this. I've never seen more boring and awful presentations than someone trying to do somebody else's presentation. So I'm not trying to do that. I think I can I'm just going to hit some of the highlights of it, and then we can wrap this into our discussion. The new thing is rewards for participation in health plans. The question is who saves and who pays, and how insurance has historically and will continue to reflect social and cultural mores. So I think you probably know the question. Why emphasis on being healthy now? Health is good. Government activity is limited to protection of the environment in general, we say, right? Chronic diseases are the leading cause of death. We'd like to try to avoid them. Obviously, that's the whole obesity, diabetes thing. Relentless increases in healthcare costs, which is probably the number one problem. And, of course, what we're talking about today, the ACA and its refusal to permit risk selection. That is, we can't not insure you because you have a, quote, pre-existing condition or you're at risk, at very high risk. Happy to email you this slide. This is a very comfortable. But here are the options for cost control, and that's really what we're looking at. We can reduce payments to providers. We can improve efficiency of healthcare delivery. We can reduce profits and administrative costs. We can shift costs to patients, most likely, right, and move risk rating inside the plan instead of outside the plan. Right? The ACA prohibits a lot of this. We won't get involved in that. These are different ways you can attack the problem of cost, health status, medical condition, claims experience, receipt of health care. These are ways we can categorize you inside the plan, whether you're a high user or a low user. And these are very technical issues, which I'm not going to get into. There are ways that are acceptable to try to help get people to stop smoking, for example, and to get involved in a gym or fitness program or other things. And there are exceptions to the exception, and we're not going to get involved. That's very, very, very technical. But there are already existing rules that are probably going to be retained, where you can encourage patients and give them rewards for losing weight, for not smoking, et cetera. The question is whether we're doing basically risk rating under a new rubric called health promotion, you know, and whether we're going to, again, try to shift the responsibility of being unhealthy away from society to the individual. And the impetus to do this is the fact that the sickest people, I always find this a shocking figure, the sickest people use the most health insurance. Gee, really? And that people who are really sick, like in the last 6 months of their life, use most of their health insurance in the last 6 months of their life. And I'd say, well, when else would they use it, right? I mean, sure, if you knew what the last 6 months were, what, you wanted to shoot them or what? I mean, really. But when an actuary looks at this, they say, we got to stop that. we got to somehow change that high spending group. We got to prevent them from doing that. And so Professor Mariner asked two questions. What costs are saved? Immediate, later life, it matters what costs you're saving. If you're saving costs at the end of life, somebody else is going to be paying for it, whether you're saving costs at the beginning. It could be the employer obviously is only paying for it. Well, you're an employee. Once you retire, they're not going to pay for it anymore. Insurers may insure you up to the age of 65, right? The government, after 65, as long as we have Medicare, they're going to be paying for it. The individual is always going to be paying for some of it, it seems to me. So we can worry about that. Again, health, big whoop, right? Health expending grows with age, yes, of course, you know. But the government share grows with age, too, which that's kind of interesting. But again, most of that's the Medicare effect. Now, what actual impact on cost do these healthy living things have? And it turns out they have an impact on cost, right? This is two British studies published in 2008, the smoking cohort, the obese cohort, and then the healthy living, the public health people. And not too surprising, the healthy living people live 7 extra years. What may or may not be surprising to you, and it's not surprising to this group, but it is to a lot of groups, is that the healthy people cost the most. Right? The more healthy we make people, the longer they live and the more they cost in the end. We're all better off, but I should say that. Keep them smoking. I'm drop dead and we'll save money. Right? So what your values are, what you're measuring, if you're only thinking about money, you're actually not thinking that much about health, because they can come there. Who's the most affected? Well, again, we know this. Health status is strongly correlated with income. Not that the richer you are, the healthier you are, but there's a correlation. Chronic conditions are more common in lower income populations. And we put a list of income, education, housing, occupation, environment, behavior. Some of those you have some control over, but most of those you have very, very little control over. Currently developing many, many predictive models, not as many as we thought we would. Data mining is going on by insurance companies all around to try to figure out who are these expensive people. Can we figure out a way either to get them to change their habits or to get them out of our insurance policy, right? And this is really the question. This is more a policy question. Are we really involved in health promotion? Are we involved in cost reduction, cost containment, or is this just prejudice? We don't like smokers. We don't like people who are overweight. Risk factors that wellness programs target can be viewed as conditions for which society holds individuals personally responsible. That's not a surprise, right? They do not target guns, skiing, motorcycling, snowmobiling, horseback riding, right? All the hobbies of the rich. They do not try to prevent job stress or shift work or improve wage rates, right? So wellness programs, and this is Professor Marinus' conclusion, wellness programs may well be, in insurance, a disadvantage to most people who are most in need of help. Right? So we may, with the Affordable Care Act, actually, it's hard to believe, you could actually make things worse, at least for a cohort of people who have serious illness or serious health problems. These are the conclusions. She has a whole bunch of slides after the conclusions, but I'm going to conclude with her conclusions, and we can discuss the other issues later. Without explicit standards for selecting conditions for which people should be held personally responsible, there's no principled limit to personal responsibility. And I think Wendy Parmet suggested it as well. You know, the whole arc right now from the Tea Party on through is going through your life, your choices, you live with it, right? We're not responsible for your health care. You are for your health or your health care. Okay, if cost is a justification, then other equally costly conditions could be targeted in insurance, of course. And we talked already about horseback riding and skiing, motorcycle riding, whatever. That would limit our liberty, though. We couldn't do that. Cost savings are uncertain, and they really are. It's not clear that any of these are going to save any money. The only thing that is clear is the more they permit you to live longer, the more the expenses are going to accrue to the federal government, because you're going to live everything after you're on Medicare, at least, whether that's 65 or 75, whatever age it turns out to be eventually, the government will wind up paying most of those bills. Wendy says, or will it, she's not thinking of Medicare going bankrupt, but those things, points I think are really really important. So we've come to a kind of a crossroads here. We accept the fact that healthy living is a really important thing. The public health goal is important, but we're losing at the same time the sight of the notion that the government should take major responsibilities for ensuring the conditions under which people can be healthy. Thank you.